A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Let's see if I remember how to do this, because it's been a while since we last got together. Since my job is being an a-hole, or my old job.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with the guys at Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and enjoy talking baseball and, of course, the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Hello, it's Ken. I am unemployed, and with me are Jeff and Adam of Obstructive View. They are not as unemployed, I guess. How are you guys doing?
I'm employed.
Self-employed and drowning in it.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll see if everyone's fired in what, 4 months or not. But depending on the outcome of the election. So I guess it might be that our budget could be doubled for problematic reasons.
Oh, no. All right. Yeah, but yeah, we're definitely in the midst of the postseason. The wild card rounds have finished. We're in the, I guess, the middle of the division rounds now. And of course, the Cubs did not make the postseason. I guess we got to be a little cranky about that, because we didn't get a chance to at the end of the year due to job related issues. But there were some statements from Jed Hoyer, of course, and the players. I don't think we've received the email from the end of year email from Tom Ricketts yet, but I think that's on its way. And yeah, I guess we could talk a lot about the playoffs and how the Cubs are going to get back to it. So what do you guys think? Good plan?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Okay. I'm on board.
Yes. Yes. I love it when a plan comes together.
As the spring gave way to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
First of all, Adam, this is like your self-employed Zoom account. Is that how this is working?
That is the case, yes.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, well, until I am gainfully employed, I think we'll have to do this, because before I was just basically using my work's Teams account. But I think there are other ways to find like free or discounted recording software, but you know, for now this seems to be working. And I guess we'll start off with the playoffs, because that's fresh on our minds. As far as I know, the Guardians, the Yankees, the Dodgers at this time anyway, and the Mets and Phillies are tied, but the other three are leading their series, but the Padres are doing their thing while we speak. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun actually to watch these series, even though like three out of four like wild card rounds were sweeps. And I feel like the guys who advance pretty much kind of deserve to be there, although you could argue that three out of the eight teams still in the playoffs are there because the White Sox suck so much.
Yeah, but not as much. Like it's a very balanced schedule now compared to past years. So everybody plays everybody. Everybody had their chance to make the other teams worse, and everybody got a little bit of White Sox added to their win total. And if you got swept by the White Sox, God help you, and may he have mercy on your soul.
Didn't the Angels get swept by the White Sox at the end of the year? I think that kind of happened, right?
I think it was them, yeah.
Yeah, but they weren't going to the playoffs anyway. But you're right. Like, everybody got their shot at the White Sox, and even the Cubs did. And, of course, you know, they swept. Otherwise, I guess, without the White Sox, the Cubs would have been under 500. But, yeah, what did you guys think about that doubleheader on Monday, even though they knew the hurricane was going to hit like all week?
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't have happened, first of all. But the fact that it did happen, it was fairly exciting. Was pretty cool. But I'd rather not have that happen in general.
Yeah, they go to such great lengths to make all the games on the final day of the season start at the same time to eliminate the possibility of what happening, especially in this relatively new setup where there's a tiebreaker, a non-game tiebreaker that just based on your schedules, if you have the same record, no extra game, no chance to argue your case. Just whoever won the tiebreaker between those two teams, they're on, which it used to in the NFL, but in baseball, there was always that last game between any tied teams that would, clear up any discrepancy. But with that added round, they did away with it. So it, yeah, that ha having two teams both who would gain entry if they won one of the games of the doubleheader, meaning the team that lost game one would get to play the drunk winner of game one in a second game, like with no incentive whatsoever for the other team other than sheer spite, to put their best foot forward in that second game. That if the Cubs had been in the Diamondbacks' shoes, I can't imagine there would be a single Cubs fan who didn't feel irate at the way that played out. But since it's Diamondbacks fans and I don't care about them, I guess it was fine.
Yeah, it's entirely possible that the Mets and the Atlanta both hated Arizona just enough to say, whoever wins the next part, you can win. Because, they basically just needed the split. So there was no incentive for them to go all out except for in the first game.
Yeah, they certainly played game one like it mattered.
Yeah, for
One of the
sure.
all-time great, I guess not really postseason, but in effect, it was. It felt like a postseason game. Just a great back and forth affair. Super fun, but ultimately relatively inconsequential.
Yeah, but the Mets actually carried that chaos forward. They did that today, actually, as we were recording. Like, if you guys watched the early afternoon game, they were trading leads like back and forth, and there was like a two-run homer to tie the game in the top of the ninth, and Nick Castellanos walked it off in the bottom. So it was like the weeest of wees, if you know the Twitter user who does that. But yeah, it was I think I was able to watch the end of that, and it was just crazy. And then I actually watched most of Yu Darvish's start tonight before we hopped on. And yeah, it's been really nice to watch him do so well, especially with a great defense behind him. Like, basically, Padres are oops, all shortstops. So you have a shortstop in center, and you have a shortstop in right, and you have a shortstop at shortstop. And I guess Cronenworth isn't really a shortstop, but you guys know what I'm saying. There's good defenders all around Diamond. Even like Luis Arraez, who's not known for being a good defender, made a great play. So you got lucky, but you was also pitching extremely well.
Yeah, I watched yesterday's game a little more than today's, but it was nice to see that the Mets could actually do something before the eighth inning. Like I swear, like for like the past week, it's once the eighth inning shows up, their offense would just go supernova. They did still score two runs in the ninth today too, so it's been insane.
Yeah, I've seen multiple people express this opinion that I definitely share, that of all the years for the Cubs not to make the playoffs, this feels like a good one to sit out because it has been a cardiac exercise nonstop. Every series just seems to be a heart-wrenching thriller. So, yeah, the way that the Cubs played this year in the way that they failed to protect leads in June, having a lead in this.
The thing I saw today was a Giants fan who got real frustrated with, he walked to the Giants game and was complaining that New York football Giants, not the San Francisco ones.
Ah, yes.
It was like, I've had enough of this game. I'm going to go watch the Mets. I just died laughing.
Yeah, that's probably not the best way to reduce one's blood pressure. But yeah, I'm just trying to look at the standings right now. I kind of recall that every single team in the NL had to have like 89 wins in order to get in. This is like a really weird year where just about everybody in the National League was sort of kind of good. And, you know, the Cubs are six games out, but they had a greater than 500 record. The Diamondbacks also have the 89 wins. They lost a tiebreaker to the two teams in front of them. And, yeah, it was just one of those years, unlike last year when you just needed 84 to get in, plus a tiebreaker, of course, because the Cubs didn't. They lost the tiebreaker, and that's why they couldn't get in, among other reasons. But yeah, it's I think it goes back to the end of year comments with Craig Counsell and Jed Hoyer referencing that 90 win mark. If you get to 90, you're definitely getting a wild card and you probably win the division. But then you look at Milwaukee, they didn't get swept this year. So, like, you know, getting rid of Craig Counsell reduced their chances of getting swept, but they still lost the series because the Mets decided to mount a great comeback. And it's kind of like, okay, the Cubs had a bullpen that really needed to find itself over the first couple months, and then they did, and they still blew a few saves here and there, but they really solidified. But then you have several teams like the Astros with Josh Hader. Like, he blew a lead, and that's why the Astros are eliminated. Devin Williams of the Milwaukee Brewers, he blew a lead, which is why the Brewers are no longer playing. Even today, you know, Edwin Diaz, he blew a lead, and he didn't get the blown or the loss because he wasn't the pitcher on record when the Mets walked off, or I'm sorry, the Phillies walked off. But it was just kind of interesting, like, how when you have really good competition, it doesn't really matter because of the chaotic nature of this tournament.
Do you think the league is juicing the balls for postseason?
I wouldn't put it past them, man. There are a lot of really high pitches that just went out of the park. Like the other day, Dylan Cease threw a high fastball that I was like, I think Shohei popped that up, and then it just like just kept going, you know. And I think Vientos hit a couple of high ones for home runs, pretty actually impactful home runs. So that was kind of weird, but maybe they're just that strong. I don't know. Like, unless they were able to grab those baseballs and give it to what's her name, the physicist, was it Meredith Wills? Because she was the ones who cut baseballs apart and like try to show that there was something different with the consistency of said baseballs, right? So unless you're able to get those balls, like, you can't tell for sure, but I wouldn't put it past MLB for changing out the baseballs.
Yeah, I hate to go all conspiracy theorist, but there's been so much so many proven cases in the last several years when the different balls have been used in different circumstances and in unpredictable and unannounced ways, it's impossible to just rule it out. It's kind of like, it's even more suspicious than my general suspicion of any Houston Astro who takes an off-speed pitch when it seems too irresistible to actually pass up. Like, that one's never going away, but it's like, it probably should. But this, the changing of the balls, and, you know, it's been so exciting. It's not an easy suspicion to dismiss.
The real play would be to only swap the balls out after like the seventh inning.
Oh. Yeah. That'll really, really mess with a lot of relievers, like high impact relievers, and their next year's contract if they're in their walk year, right? But your postseason ERA was like 9. But I was also throwing super balls.
Yeah, that and the whatever balls they throw to Kyle Schwarber for the first at bat. Although it doesn't appear that he really needs a whole lot of assistance getting those to leave the yard. Dear heavens.
Yeah. So the other thing that I think was pretty viral, I shared it with you guys, but the John Boy video where he showed a potential Devin Williams tip. And I don't think there's necessarily a tip. I think he was just hanging his pitches.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, same.
There's a difference shown, but unless and players aren't quick to say that they've spotted it, so you know, we might hear about this 10 years down the road or something like that. But yeah, it's a good thing to point forward to, like in future years, to see if that plays out. But to just assume that the batters noticed that slight difference and that it made a big enough difference that they could, you know, really do something with his pitches, which are hard enough to hit, even if you do know that's coming. They weren't good pitches that got hit. If he had shown repeated instances of guys being able to lay off the really tough changeups, I would accept it. But when you hit a changeup out, there's nothing in his tipping of the pitches that indicates that changeup is going to stay in the strike zone. So, yeah, I'm not sure I buy it.
Right. And the way I think about it is, like, a pitch is a good pitch until it isn't, because a guy can miss a spot by, like, you know, 18 inches. But if the batter is going to swing and miss at it or ground it, like, weakly to an infielder anyway, it's by default a good pitch. It gave you a good result. But you can hit your spot. Like, the one that Dylan Cease threw to Shohei Ohtani, that was exactly where the catcher set up. And Shohei just hit it out, you know? So sometimes the batter guesses right, or his hand-eye coordination is so good, and it's just a perfect storm. So, you know, that, like with baseball, like there are always those hit percentages or catch percentages or whatever like that, right? And the reason why there are percentages is that sometimes the really cool stuff happens. And that's what BABIP was based on. So from that standpoint, I just never know. Like, the idea is maybe just don't throw it anywhere near a strike zone to certain hitters. Or don't throw it in, like, the middle square of the strike zone that you see on game day. Now, that was one of the things that really bugged me about the Cubs this year, was that a lot of the pitches that were hit out of the park were in that, like, maybe you shouldn't throw here part of the zone. So, on the other hand, a lot of the pitches that were hit during the, like, I was kind of tracking this, right? So during the Mets game against the Brewers, they weren't middle. They were hanging just a little bit, but they were, like, to the edge or, you know, down and not, like, just kind of sitting on a tee. So in that case, maybe they did see the pitches, like you said, but they still had to connect the bat to said ball. And for Pete Alonso, he had to connect it in such a way that it actually went out of the park. And that was a really, really cool thing to watch on TV live, I must say.
Yeah, the games have been fun. That was a pretty cool moment. It was more difficult when you heard Bob Uecker calling it. God bless that man. He is a broadcasting entertainment treasure, but I do not envy the suffering that he went through. As he said, that one, this one had a had some sting on it. Yeah, if you are a dyed-in-the-wool Brewers fan, you've definitely paid your dues, and that one was a rough one to watch. But yeah, I think with the pitch location and all of that, like the pitches don't exist in a vacuum. The whole rhythm and shape of them, and you know what your delivery looks like. His delivery is so consistent from pitch to pitch, even when he's switching pitches. So it's not just location. It's also the batter's timing. What is he expecting? What have you set him up with in past at bats? All of that, you know. So the pitch doesn't exist in a vacuum, but sometimes it does just suck.
Yeah, it's like the old line about how, you know, the other side gets paid too.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, they obviously did enough to get there, so you're facing better competition anyway. Like, even Mariano Rivera gave up a World Series. So it's not like it doesn't happen. It's not like a guy, as automatically as he is, as Hall of Famer as he is always going to be that automatic. They will lose. So I think that is actually part of the appeal, to see like really good performances against the odds, because when you put in that level of reliever, you kind of expect, okay, he's going to fire like these weird sweeper, slider, whatever the hell it is that Devin Williams throws, or this 99 plus mile per hour fastball from Edwin Diaz, right? Or I guess the guy from San Diego is one of the Suarez's. I want to say Robert. He throws 100 plus, but sometimes it's just like a flat 100 plus that can go a long way the other way when someone connects, and that happened a few times over the end of the season, and that's why it was kind of interesting, because like San Diego was supposed to beat a couple of those teams that he like lost to, and that was part of the reason why the Cubs didn't make it. Like, a lot of the Cubs stuff is self-inflicted, and of course I bring up the Cubs because this is technically a Cubs podcast. But yeah, it does sting to see all these teams doing so well and having such fun in the postseason, and the Cubs are sitting on their couches watching. But it's also incentive to go back out and get back into postseason, because as you see, like, the bye teams are not invincible. The home field advantage in the wild card is literally nothing, as you saw from a few of the teams. It's basically still get in and you have a chance. And I think that's what they should strive to do until they can get to those consistent 90 plus win teams, because there is always a chance to get in.
Yeah, there's definitely a vibe with the postseason now, that just because you're in doesn't mean that you have any assurance that you're going to be playing into the first weekend. You know, it doesn't matter if you win your division or not. If you're not one of those top two teams in the league, you know, National, American, what have you, if you don't have that first wild card round bye, nobody is guaranteed anything. And it's so interesting. I heard somebody, one of the Chicago beat writers who does a baseball show every Saturday, Bruce Levine, he talked about how great the wild card round was, and then complained that it was so stupid that it's set up that way, because you have, oh, they're just gone after two games. Like, you play, oh, so we should maybe just make the whole season two games. It's like, no, we made the season 162 games. I think everybody had a chance to prove themselves that they're among the top teams in the league. And then you play the wild card round. And yeah, if you lose two games, you're out. Sorry. Like, for the longest time, baseball was all about you win your league or else. You have the best record in the National League or the best record in the American League, or you don't make it. And then it was divisions. You got to win your division, half of your respective league, or you're not making the playoffs, because the season means something. And so now teams that win their division but aren't one of the top two teams can lose in two games, because they're not one of the, like the Brewers were not one of the two best teams in the National League. Like, they did not make, it wasn't one of those weird years from before they balanced out the schedule where three or four teams were winning 100 games in each league. The Brewers were nothing special to like demand that they make it to the next round. If you aren't building a superstar lineup, you are not going to be guaranteed that you make it to the divisional round of the playoffs. And even if you are a superstar lineup, you are not guaranteed you're going to make the LCS. I'm totally okay with that, you know, but like to act like it's some huge problem that we didn't see enough Milwaukee Brewers this year. Like, I'm sorry. I'm not seeing it. They were a good team. They were not a great team.
And they
I'm okay that we're done watching them.
And they weren't good in the right ways when it mattered most. So I think that's part of the narrative structure, right? Is like, yeah, you were really good in the regular season, but what did you do in the playoffs? And that, I guess it kind of pisses off a lot of people, but in a way, it's true. Like, the postseason kind of favors who is hot at the right time in the right place, right? And that's where your legendary stories are made. So in that sense, I feel like, for example, the Pete Alonso home run in the top of the ninth against Milwaukee in that clinching game, that was a legendary moment, and everybody was talking about that. I think a lot of people are going to be talking about the Nick Castellanos walk-off if that, you know, spurs the Phillies to win their division, or I'm sorry, their divisional series. And I kind of liken it to the NCAA basketball tournament, because part of it is, yeah, Duke or UNC or Kentucky is always going to have power numbers, or some other random team that happens to be number one at that time. But a 16th seed upsetting a number one seed is huge news. That, I think, happened to Purdue a few years back, and that was crazy. Like, you'd never think that's ever going to happen, and it did happen. So, yeah, like, the underdog gets a lot of play, and I think, like, in many ways, I don't feel like once you get into the playoffs, you can consider anybody an underdog, especially this year, because you can see a lot of flaws across even the best teams.
It's not even necessarily the short series thing. Like, I've complained about the playoff thing in the past too, just that winning the regular season doesn't earn you more, so to speak. But I think the bigger issue, but it's something they can't really fix, is just how, like, the way you build a team for the regular season, the way you build it for the playoffs is totally different. Like, I guess the Tigers have kind of blinded us a little bit, because they basically had bullpen games like every other day in the second half. But, like, you know, having a bullpen that you could lean on in a way that you would never do if you wanted these guys to pitch another, you know, 5 months, kind of makes it a different game in the playoffs. But there's also, like, no real fix for it, so to speak, either. So it just kind of is what it is. And, you know, we just say that this is what the playoffs are. If you win it, that's great. Certainly we as Cubs fans aren't going to complain about, you know, things being different in the playoffs versus the regular season in 2016.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Are you guys happy with the current playoff structure? Like, I just keep kind of going back and forth and trying to figure out how to give the top seed more an advantage, but there's simply no time, right? Because they've already squeezed 162 games plus all the off days that the players' unions is negotiating within that time into that regular season. Like, there's no time to build in more space. So you're basically beholden to the schedule that they have now, and it seems like, hey, if the top seed or the higher seed gets last at bat all three games, you're already at an advantage. So do you really need more of an advantage so that you can guarantee that 55 or 60% of the time the top seed goes in, or do you just like embrace the chaos and let it fly?
I just embrace the chaos. I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's of the major sports. I mean, baseball is the one that seems like it's the most like the lesser team is more likely to lose in baseball than it would be in like basketball or the NFL. So it just is what it is. It's fun. The thing I like the best actually about the new playoff format, especially in the wild card round, is just that there's so much baseball, especially when it's like four games on one day. I think that's awesome for the sport.
Yeah, it's four games a day for at least 2 days in a row, and then possibly even a third day if nobody sweeps. So yeah, that's really fun. I think I had a lot of good times. I guess the only thing I didn't like was having to figure out like which channel had which game and having to switch back and forth. But that's a story for another day. I think with a lot of these Diamond Bally bankruptcies and whatnot, like MLB is eventually going to figure out how to do like a standalone product that everybody can access anyway, even if I guess we have to pay for it. But that's the price of business these days, right?
Hey, just give us more options. I was just complaining earlier today that, despite the fact that I shelled out a bunch of money for a Sunday ticket, I wish I could pay even more to have no ads in my local feed, living in a swing-ish state.
Oh my God. Political ads should just be outlawed to begin with. They add nothing to our society. They only take but I am okay with the format how it is. I think this format is a lot of fun. Just like you guys were saying, there is so much baseball. It's so intense. I think the adrenaline of the playoffs does bring out an added level of performance in the players, especially in those late innings where it is just so, it's more difficult for a pitcher to dominate. And, players are just a little more amped up than normal. My ideal playoff structure that I will always advocate for is to go away from the, if you want to make sure the best teams stay in the playoffs for as long as possible, you make it so that they can't be eliminated in three games. So I really like the idea of doing, for each league a round robin style tournament where all the postseason teams, all the teams that make the postseason play each other three times. And the teams with the best record in that round robin advance. And then you would have basically, if you had an odd, you could make it so that there were an odd number of teams so that every day in that first round of the postseason, one team in each league would have a day off and everybody else is playing each other. And you could even have it so that the best teams host these playoffs. So you have a couple different sites where all the games are going on. But yeah, every game, I mean, every day for maybe 2 weeks, you would have three or four or five playoff games going on. And that way, everybody plays like you don't have anybody ending their postseason after one day or 2 days. But you do have people who, as the rounds go on, start to lose a little bit of hope. But I think you could do it in a way that, people aren't really eliminated until the final couple of days, and it would be a lot of fun. And then you go back to, you know, the elimination series from there. I don't think it's ever going to happen, but if I were commissioner,
that's what you would do. Yeah. It sounds very similar to what they do for like the World Cup or the Olympics, you know,
Champions League is kind of similar too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The World Baseball Classic does something like that too. Basically you do that so that you can configure seating in the medal round. And then they go to like a straight, like best of three or whatever. The College World Series does that in a way. They do a double elimination. But I think that's just because there's just so many teams in the tournament with all the super regionals and whatnot. They have to figure out how to do that. But there is a possibility that's something like that is possible. Like I feel like because of, you know, their motivation to expand to at least 32 teams, and the fact that you look across the way and the NFL has their bye plus six kind of system. That's what I think they're gearing towards, especially, you know, if the postseason continues to rake in most of the cash, they want that. They want an expanded postseason, and we're never going to go to like a contract post system like, you know, the one per league of yore. But yeah, I do like the idea of like just giving everybody another chance to just show, you know, where you at. Or like it's not pure chaos like the NCAA tournament where it's like one and done, right? You have to go through every single team. If you like at the College World Series, it's like you lose twice and you're done. So there is like a loser's bracket that allows you to get back into the thick of things. So if you only lose once, all hope is not lost. But, you know, for the amount of time that they have and for not trying to get too deep into November, I feel like the system as is fine. It's just first things first, get into the tournament, figure it out later.
Well, and if you really wanted to mess with things, they could always switch up the nature of American League and National League, you know, National League being the senior circuit and American League being the junior circuit. Is you could make the National League the better league, you know, like the same way that the soccer leagues are set up.
Oh, you're talking about relegation. Okay.
Yeah. So the lesser performing teams, you know, could even be it could be more teams. It could be half. I don't know how you set it up, but to where they have their own tournament while the, you know, the Premier Leagues are still playing their games, and everybody, yeah, basically everybody in the, well, everybody who's not relegated, who isn't facing relegation from the top league advances to the playoffs. And if you don't advance to the, you know, the upper level of the playoffs, they all battle each other, you know, for the remaining scraps. And then they could work into the World Series. So you'd have I don't have it all figured out in my head, but basically you'd have a champion of the National League and a champion of the American League. And then, you know, they could somehow merge into the competition for the, you know, for who enters into the World Series. But I think if Major League Baseball was willing to get out of the basic setup that they have now, they could make it to where teams are forced to be good and competitive or never really get that involved in the playoffs. You know, like I don't want to figure it out in my head because I'm going to get it wrong. How many teams make the postseason now?
12. It should be 12 of the 30, 6 in each league. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say 10 teams from the National League, you know, whatever we call it, if we keep it National and American, 10 teams from the National League make the postseason, 2 from the lower American League make the postseason. You know, if you had it set up that way, that your chances of advancing and being a part of the final championship are lower when your team sucks. Now, I don't think fans would go for that because they'd always, you know, want to have that hope springs eternal chance every year. But I think it would be pretty cool if you basically had a higher level of competition league and the lower teams that just wanted to make some money and not really compete. Like, it would be obvious that that's what they were doing,
right?
You know,
right.
And not reap the benefits in the same way that they are now by everybody seeming like they're playing with the big boys. You know, like when you're just the Pirates and you're like, if we're good, we're fine, you know, or, you know, whatever the A's are, I don't even know what their name is going to be for next year, but
they'll still be the A's. I don't think they're going to call themselves the Sacramento A's. They'll just be like the Athletics without a home. I kind of feel like they're going to have trouble attracting free agents because of very, very obvious reasons, i.e. Sacramento is not a major league stadium. But yeah, they're just the A's. And I think there is sort of a penalty for sucking so hard. Basically, it's the White Sox for sure. And then the A's might be the other team that can't pick higher than 10th this year, despite sucking so bad, because they had lottery picks the previous year. So if you have lottery picks two or so years in a row, you can't do a third year, because that was the previous CBA was, or this existing CBA is making sure that you have anti-tank measures. I don't think that's necessarily a deterrent for them to stop sucking, but it certainly stops them from hoarding all the big picks. So now you kind of incentivize the teams to at least spend a little bit of money to get out of the muck. But I don't know how that's going to work in practice. Like, the White Sox were just so bad. You feel like they can only go up from here, but maybe it's a challenge accepted situation where they lose 130 next year instead of the 121 this year.
Yeah, suck finds a way, I guess.
I'm trying to think of a Jeff Goldblum line to to add to that. But, oh, Lord, oh. They really did suck. But it was interesting how they sucked. They blew so many late leads. You know, that obviously that seems to be a theme. But, man, they couldn't just lose. They had to do it in, you know, some old Irish lament kind of way. Like, you had to see their souls being rent in two. It was awful to watch at some point.
I don't know. It kind of crosses over. Like, I work with two White Sox fans, and like, they both just kind of busted out their White Sox gear the last week or two of the season, just because they're like, this is just so so historically impressive that we feel like we just got to own it.
I think they actually like booed in the last home series when the White Sox won, right? Because they're just like, well, we wanted to see loss number 120 or 121, and you guys keep winning. What the heck are you doing? So yeah, that was pretty hilarious.
But we do need to talk about how they eventually broke the record, doing it in the presence of the Tigers, who clinched in the same moment, you know, as we're talking about the changing the rules so that you can't just suck year after year after year to build up your team stock the way the Tigers did for so long in the the early aughts. But the Tigers basically did what the Cubs had to do if they were going to make the postseason. It just the Tigers actually pulled it off.
Yeah.
And to do it with Jason Benetti in the booth, you know, being cast away by Reinsdorf and the White Sox and finding a new home in the Tigers, and them making this historic run, you know, out of the clutches of the odds, that's been really, really fun to watch unfold.
You love to see it.
Definitely do.
The beauty and the history in this cathedral. The sky so blue against the grass so green. Like time stood still forever.
I think it's actually kind of instructive, and I feel like we should probably talk about this after the World Series, because at that point, you know, contracts expire, free agency actually begins. They had to figure out arbitration and all that. But the Cubs, thankfully, were nowhere near that bad. They were just kind of disappointing, because you knew there was potential behind the hood, and they just needed that extra spark, and the spark came a little too late, because they really were still mathematically viable up until like the last 2 weeks of the season. That was kind of impressive, to considering how low they had gone. And I feel like if you think of this as kind of like a developing nucleus of a good team, you just had to add a little bit to it. And what happened with the Tigers, it was really interesting. I think they actually sold off a little bit and then just started playing the kids, and they rattled off a bunch of wins. And I feel like that's going to get AJ Hinch a few Manager of the Year votes because of what he did, along with a gentleman from Kansas, I think it's like Matt Quatero or something. But yeah, it's like you never know when they're going to flip that switch. And I think we just need to see that switch get flipped. And with the Cubs firing a bunch of coaches or letting them go, and the scouts are being let go, and they're changing up like the way they do business or whatever Jed said at the end of the thing. I wasn't really listening, but they're gonna do something. They have to. This is his last year. He's a lame duck, and basically if he doesn't do something, he's fired. So
I've heard a lot of talk about the Cubs needing to do something, which I generally agree with, but at the same time, when you look at the team, various elements of the team got better.
Yes.
You know, if the Cubs had who they had in the second half the entire year, they would have been considerably better. And I know they didn't really make a lot of additions at the trade deadline or anything, but having PCA on the team and allowing him to develop through this year and to play through some of the growing pains, and Amaya making progress as a catcher and as a hitter, you know, making that switch in his batting stance, and seeing how that changed his production, and both of those together transforming the bottom of the lineup into something that could really support the rest of the Cubs lineup. At the end, they weren't a bad team, and they did it just by improving who was on the roster.
Right.
So that's, I mean, they're a different team than they were at the beginning of the year without changing the roster at all, because so many pieces developed in the bullpen as well. You know, the Cubs bullpen kind of became addition by subtraction near the end. It wasn't perfect, but without making any huge acquisitions through the year, you know, no blockbuster trades, they picked up some guys off the waiver wire or whatever, but they're a better team at the end than when they started. Do I think the Cubs owe it to their fans to improve the team more than that? Yes. But that being said, I think if you play this year over again with this exact roster and with, you know, a contractual window for Bollinger to, not Bollinger, Bellinger. Goodness, I almost added a 1990s pitcher in there. But yeah, with Cody having the opportunity to rejoin the team or stay on the team if he wants, who knows what's going to happen there. But I don't know that the Cubs are going to make a huge number of deals. I think it could be having Shaw come up and I don't know what, Owen Casey maybe, and like not having Patrick Wisdom around anymore, or not, you know, not letting Mastroboni or Madrigal pick up a whole lot of playing time, you know, like that's, it's kind of like the bottom of the roster is where that opening is. I don't know that they're going to make a ton of big front of the rotation or top of the batting order additions. I just don't.
Yeah. I do agree with you in principle that the team as it stands is solid enough. And I think like we would all agree that we would like them to be better, right? They need to be better. They need to add to it. Like even Jed and Craig Counsell said that at their end of year-ish pressers. So I think the Athletic, among other rags, have all also talked about the need to find a top of a rotation pitcher to add to the mix with Steele and Imanaga and Tyone and whoever else. Like basically the goal should be to push Tyone to your number four or number five starter. Kyle Hendricks is gone, which, you know, you don't want to say, yeah, Kyle's done in a good way, because he is such an important part of Cubs history. But the sad truth is that he's outgrown his usefulness to the organization, and you need to let someone else step in. So from that standpoint, there's one part that could be upgraded. Not having Madrigal, like you said, is another upgrade. And again, I think we can actually talk about this much more after the World Series when everything gets up. Picture becomes clearer. But
yeah,
even so, like during this time, you know, like the Reds just signed Terry Francona to be their manager. And that was like crazy. Nobody expected that. Right. So there could be things happening right now that's like they can't really announce yet because the World Series isn't over and the commissioner doesn't like that kind of news. But things like that could be happening. Like they're not going to replace Craig Counsell, obviously, but lining up new coaches, figuring out better like training and development, all those things, like basically building up the pathway towards blockbuster trades from the depth that the Cubs have in their system. Like right now, the top 100 lists, prospect lists across the board, 8 of them are Cubs. So that's a pretty big deal. Like these are important developmental blocks that really set the franchise on a positive trajectory. And at that point you say, well, look at the Tigers. Some of their guys were prospects. They came up, they contributed. Why can't you see a Matt Schauer or an Owen Casey do that? Right.
That's the thing. That as much as I hear people say, oh, the Cubs need to add a star, they need to add a star. You have to have just a perennial all-star, possible MVP candidate on your team, or you can't win. And
maybe he's already on the team. Yeah.
Or in the system. I don't think the reason why it was no big deal to listen to Counsell's end of season remarks or Hoyer's end of season remarks is because we should have all learned by now at this point that what they say just doesn't matter at all. They will give us maybe a hint at what's really going on, but it doesn't matter. The words don't matter. They're not telling us their actual plan. They're giving us something to occupy us for a few months until the season starts. They're not going to say our plan is, you know, we're going to sign a free agent pitcher that we think could fill in the middle of the rotation and Cody Bellinger again. And that's it. And hopefully that'll be enough. Even if that was totally the plan all along, they're just not going to say it. But we know enough about this fascist supporting ownership and this coupon clipping front office that their plan is that the lottery of draft picks and player development is eventually going to bring them to someone who's going to become a star from within the depths of the organization. That is their plan.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting Soto. They're not signing anybody else who's going to have a three-digit million-dollar contract. You know, that isn't happening. They are banking on an affordable future MVP candidate to develop from the system that they have. That is the plan. That is the hope. And as much as people say hope isn't a strategy, yeah, it is. It's our strategy.
No, like it, like you say, like if you're not going to pay to get a superstar from outside, you have to grow your own. And the fact that there are so many cool, toolsy, fun to watch players in the minors right now for the Cubs, it does give you a little bit of hope, and I think it's good hope. You know, it's not cynical to say that they're using a cheap route. No, they're doing, I think, a more balanced route, because they do have money coming off the books, they do have money to spend, but if you look at the free agent list, there's not too much to spend on other than, like, say, Corbin Burns or Juan Soto, and both of those are kind of pipe dreams, like you said. Like, it's probably not going to happen, but if it does, we will be happy to rerun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We could be surprised. They could make some big improvements, but I think people in the Cub fan community spend so much time figuring out what the best moves would be to make these, you know, marginal advances forward on the roster. And the Cubs will probably make one or two of them and then cross their fingers that, you know, the players they developed will turn out to be more than just, you know, solid placeholders on the roster. You know, they want somebody who's going to prove to be a potential MVP. You know, they want to grow their own star. And if you're going to have a guy for the most important part of his career, the most productive and financially efficient part of his career, that's how you have to do it. And there was definitely a little bit of hope getting kindled this year watching PCA, like thinking, is he the guy? You know, like, is he a guy who, like, he's not as bad as he was at the beginning of the year, and he's probably not as fantastic as he looked for that like week or two when he was just really smoking hot and, you know, producing on defense. But that's a huge question mark. You know, the floor and the ceiling on PCA seem to be shifting all over the place.
Yeah.
And that's a reason for a lot of hope. And yeah, I mean, there are some, they have so many, you know, those eight of the top 100 prospects, that's a lot of lottery tickets, you know, that's a lot of potential that could pay off. You could, you know, maybe the best they get is an everyday player out of that, but maybe there's a core there for the years moving forward.
Yeah. Or their trade capital, which it really depends on who else is willing to trade with the cuffs, right? But at the very minimum, solid role players could be had from this, and then some of them could develop into stars. We really, really are basing this all on hope, because sometimes, like, these really good performances, they just come out of nowhere and you have no idea why. So maybe that'll happen for the Cubs in 2025. Do you guys want to talk about Pete Rose, or is that a little too heavy?
My statement is just fuck Pete Rose.
That's fair enough. Yeah, he did a lot of unsavory things, and that I'm not talking just about the gambling part, but you know, hit king, major league record, got the MVP, won some World Series, et cetera, et cetera. He's a good ball player. He's just probably not the best person in the world.
Yeah, I will say that when I was first learning about baseball and what it meant to be good and how you could gain an advantage, Pete Rose was a very influential person in my baseball makeup. You know, like, I was pretty short, so I would crouch down like Pete Rose to make my strike zone look like the size of a Dixie cup. I was very much a hustle player because I wasn't very much a talent player. I enjoyed watching him. I thought it was fun to watch how he played the game, and kind of romanticized a lot of the violence with which he played the game. You know, I grew out of over time, but yeah, it's still not so much a feeling that Pete Rose needs to be honored or anything like that, because, you know, Lord knows he wasn't the best person.
And maybe it's a good idea not
of people.
Yeah, maybe it's a good idea not to truck a catcher in an all-star game. But
yeah, like, I think once, you know, when you're a kid and you run over somebody like that, it's like, it's just, oh, you're playing tough and you're getting dirty. Like, nothing really happens. You know, it's not, you don't appreciate how much it can screw up a person's life for the rest of the years that they have on earth if you get plowed into by a grown adult. It's just a whole different ball game. But the sadness that I have about Pete Rose being banned from the game is not so much about Pete Rose as a person. It's about the game of baseball specifically, that we're in this situation where some of the greatest players, like the greatest baseball careers, are sitting on the outside of Cooperstown because of various problems with how we've managed to, I don't know, lift our players up and include them in a community and make sure that they stay on track, or get over ourselves about the things that the sport chooses to demonize. You know, like, it would be, I would, and I said this on the, you know, in the chat after it happened, like, I would not like to see baseball just put Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame. What I would like to do is to allow the baseball writers to make the decision in the same way that they made the decision for everybody else. Because, yes, it's probably just that because of how he lived his life, he's outside of the Hall of Fame. But that decision was made on the sole basis of his gambling. And I think his gambling was the smallest of his problems. So I would like it to just say, okay, he served the price for his gambling. Now let's hash it out in the court of you know, not necessarily public opinion, but baseball writers' opinion. Let's chart out the history on a baseball, from a baseball standpoint. Yeah, he deserves the Hall. From a human standpoint, here are all these other things aside from the gambling that we can trot out in front of the public and say, yeah, these are the things he deserves to be kept out for. You know, right now it's kind of this Al Capone tax evasion situation, you know, where the worst things that he does is not what he's being punished for. He's being punished for, you know, betting on his own sport and his own team. But it wasn't like he was running this crooked baseball operation where he was tanking the Reds. He's just a cartoon character of a man when it came to gambling. What he should be punished for, most people don't know about. So that's the part of it that I don't quite feel right about.
Yeah. I think for him and kind of the PED guys, like, just build another wing in Cooperstown called the Hall of Foibles or something. These guys were good at baseball, but yeah, they had lots and lots of issues. But their stories need to be told. Like, this is part of the history of the sport, and they were impactful in the history of the sport. So tell the stories, but kind of like in history class in high school, right? You know?
Yeah, and just be honest about the fact that the sport as a whole is pretty problematic start to finish. Yeah. I just don't think
it's not hard to make an exhibit. I don't know. I haven't been to Cooperstown in like 30 years, so I don't know how it works, but you know, make an exhibit. That's fine. Just don't give them a plaque. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't have to be inducted to be recognized as a very impactful historical figure.
It's a history museum, not a wall of plaques. So, you know, include that in the history. Yeah. Just don't put up the plaque.
Yeah. I would like it to be, you know, to have writers vote on him and say, you know what? No. I see the baseball argument, sure, but I'm still not voting him in, you know, so it can't be, you know, Bart Giamatti being the guy that held him out, or you know, the baseball commissioners that we've had over the past couple decades. You know, I just don't think are the guys who should be making that decision. But then again, who cares? It's not gonna it's part of the warts and all of baseball that you just accept that there are aspects to it that aren't going to be perfect. Hall of Fame is just one of those things.
In real time, the San Diego Padres have just won. They've even their series with the Dodgers. And I think that puts us on track to get four games on, what is it, Thursday?
Wow. They really poured it on.
Yeah, they 10-2. I think they just beat up on the bullpen in the eighth and the ninth. It was pretty close for a while, and then they just, like, stopped caring, I guess. But,
two more games tomorrow.
Exciting. AL is on. Like, if you guys were betting people now, who is going to the World Series?
Oh.
I forgot. Saying
Tigers, yeah. Padres.
Okay. Yeah. 40-year rematch. Cool.
I picked Orioles, Brewers going into the first season. So I can't decide if I want to pick the team I'm actually rooting for, or the team I want to put a stink on here. So I will abstain.
Just pick Dodgers, Yankees. Go for it.
Yeah. I don't even care about the Yankees. It's really the Dodgers I don't want to win.
No, it'll be really hilarious if they did not win. I feel like I picked Padres, Phillies for the NLCS, and I picked the Yankees to come out of the AL. I forgot. Because I was part of a pool, and I guess I should log in and figure it out, but I forgot who my NL champion was. So, Padres or Phillies versus Yankees, and then I think I had the Yankees winning regardless. So your mileage may vary, and I am often very, very wrong, as are a lot of people sometimes when it comes to baseball playoffs. So yeah, thanks for hanging out with me, guys, and thank you, Adam, for using your employment
Yeah.
in
My
order to
boss is
host
very
this.
lenient.
Thanks, boss. Of
Yeah,
yeah, so you can of course find us at obstructiveview.net. Our theme song is by Rich Tiana, and our little final out call from Hall of Famer Pat Hughes from the 2016 World Series is from Randall Sanders, and we'll hope to see you around. Yeah, and we'll definitely talk about building the Cubs into the 2025 World Series champions once this World Series is over.
it's a
So,
lock.
yeah. Or we can come back before then, like right before the World Series. It's up to you guys. I don't know. I can't tell you what to
Thank you for respecting our autonomy.
do. It was more than just a game.